Welcome to the Premier Advisors Live series. I would now like to turn the call over to Lauren Solis. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Carrie, and greetings from Premier in Charlotte, North Carolina, and welcome to today's Advisor Live titled Preparing for Medicare's Recovery Audit Contractor Permanent Program. Are you ready? Again, my name is Lauren Solis, and I'm going to be here to kick off the call today with just a few quick announcements. This teleconference is being recorded and will be posted to the Advisor Live homepage at premierinc.com within about 48 hours. I'll send you an email tomorrow with specific instructions and details on how to access all of today's materials. Following today's presentation, the operator will instruct you on how to ask questions, but you may also submit them at any time during the program through the chat feature located on your screen. While we're compiling a list of participants with questions, I will ask you to complete a brief on-screen survey about today's program, and I'd like to thank you in advance for your comments and recommendations. With that, let's get the program started, and I'll give you a quick introduction of today's speaker. It's Todd Halpin. He's the principal of Premier Consulting Solutions. Todd has over 15 years of financial and revenue cycle-related experience, where he specializes in hospital financial operations and revenue cycle process improvement. Todd has extensive experience working for not-for-profit teaching and public health care delivery systems throughout the country in various hospital financial revenue cycle process improvement areas. Prior to joining Premier, Mr. Halpin spent several years at Phase 2 Consulting in the revenue cycle and financial operations advisory practice, and before that was at Arthur Anderson working in their assurance and business advisory practice. Todd is a certified public accountant in the state of Utah and has performed numerous speaking engagements at both regional and national levels and various healthcare organizations to include HFMA, which is the Healthcare Financial Management Association, and the American College of Healthcare Executives. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Todd. Todd, are you there?
I am. Yep.
It's all yours.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks for that nice introduction. And I'm happy to participate today in this call and hope that at the end of this that the information will be useful and will either confirm or deny strategies and information that you already knew about RAC and hopefully also provide you with some good recommendations or ideas of where you should be at in the process, at least at this point in time. So I will go ahead and let's just start with, I'll move it to the next slide here, show the agenda. Where we're gonna go today with this is to spend the first few minutes at least doing a high-level overview of the demonstration project as it relates to the impact it will have in the implementing the permanent program, talk about what the current RAC implementation plan is, talk about where they're at currently in the automated issues versus the upcoming complex reviews that will take place, and we essentially have seven key steps that we recommend and implement to make sure hospitals are at least organized and prepared for not only just the RAC process, but all the different auditors that are out there, including the upcoming Medicaid integrity contractors, any expansion of the RAC program, any of your third-party or managed care payers that come in and do these audits and reviews for the same kind of payment error issues. So really, all of these processes will be applicable across the board. And then we'll just kind of wrap up with our conclusions and open it up for some Q&A. I wanted to mention that on the call with us today are my colleagues Monica Pappas and Mary Ritchie that specialize in coding and documentation and have worked also in a lot of the complex and clinical areas that are impacted by the RAC audits and will join me with comments throughout the presentation and or especially during the QA session. So with that, let's go ahead and move into kind of the overview here. I always have to start with just a little sense of humor, and I know this has been floating around the last several weeks, but it really summarizes how we feel about the RAC process, that given the choice here, the individual would rather take the RAC with a K than have to go through this RAC process, which I find is amusing because it really is. There's a lot that will be asked of hospitals and producing these records and copying the charts and having to track everything. But at the end of the day, it will be a good process and a good discipline, like I said, to help you manage not only just RAC, but across the board denials and any payment audits that occur. The RAC reality slide, as we know, the OMB, Office of Management and Budget, they were looking at, first of all, facing a Medicare program that's looking at, in short term, bankruptcy, And so they were trying to figure out federal programs that had improper payments. And, of course, Medicare was identified in the top three with $10.8 billion of improper payments. Medicaid even higher of that, anywhere from 12 to 13 billion, upwards of 19 billion, I've heard, in the Medicaid program. So that's why you're going to see a lot of focus in these next several months on the Medicaid integrity contractors, and we'll talk about that, let alone if they expand the RAC program to include Medicaid too, and we'll talk about that later in this presentation. So we know they did the demonstration project. We know the states of California, New York, and Florida, and a few others that they added on, that they went through that demonstration project, and as of they kind of wrapped up and reported in March 2008, they had corrected more than a little over $1 billion in improper payments. And as we know, the RACs are paid on a contingency fee, so $992 million or 96% of all that were overpayment corrections and takebacks. And then there were, you know, a small amount, 4% of that, that were actually underpayment corrections. So we know where the focus is. We know that what's truly at risk here is that President Obama and Medicare and CMS are looking to put money back into the Medicare and Medicaid system and pay for this health care reform, i.e., as it currently stands, providing more coverage across the country for folks to have access to health care. They're going to pay for it through these payment audits and these integrity audits. So that's kind of my third point there is, although it is meant to go correct payments, and I don't, of course, think that any hospital, there might be the one, two, you know, hospitals or individuals that do and have done some fraudulent things in the past, but I think for the most part, the majority of all systems don't mean to bill or send bills with errors in them, that it's just because of the complexity of the system and the billing process that not everything necessarily is submitted correctly and or paid correctly. So, but make no mistake, this is to fill back up the bankrupt Medicare trust funds, if you will, help them cover some of their unfunded liabilities and keep the program going and expand coverage. So as you all know, that's where the Tax Relief Act 2006 is requiring that this be fully implemented by 2010. And we'll talk about where they're at on. Just by way of focus and summary, too, as you recall, 85% of all these payment errors, these overpayments that were corrected, related to inpatient hospitals. So there were some rehab, SNF, outpatient, physicians, et cetera, that were some payment corrections, but the majority of it all comes through our inpatient services that we provide. And then on the next slide, of course, 75% of all the errors came from what they deemed to be medically unnecessary and or just plain old incorrect coding for the procedure and the documentation that they're looking at within the charts. So we're going to have to find a way to be disciplined enough to get in front of our own data, do our own data mining in the hospital, and determine and review our own charts and make sure that we are fixing whatever is causing these medical necessity issues or these coding issues. And we'll get into that here as we talk about the steps that we would recommend. Okay. Also, just by highlights, we know from the RAC demonstration project itself that I've just listed a few things here, that on the inpatient hospital, there was surgical procedures in the wrong setting. There were issues with debridement, however you pronounce that, that was incorrectly coded based upon what was actually documented, et cetera, et cetera. And down on the outpatient side, same kind of things. They're looking for where multiple units were billed incorrectly, where it should have just been billed under one unit, especially with expensive medicines like Neulasta and bronchoscopy and endoscopy services, et cetera. But then on the next slide, and this was highlighted in an HFM article back in July, and I've quoted the source down there at the bottom, but there's additional RAC areas that we know are coming to, absolutely the inpatient admission status versus observation and how that was documented, and did the patient actually meet criteria to be admitted as an inpatient. And this is going to be an interesting one to look at, too, because a lot of hospitals now have retreated the other way. Their observation days have started to skyrocket because they're trying to be too conservative, and, you know, we can talk about that. But here's a list of a few other things, including the three-day SNF qualifying acute care inpatient stays, making sure claims are combined, and you know some of the details behind sepsis. And the one that I found very interesting is the second one, is this acute care discharge disposition that is documented once the patient leaves the hospital conflicts with if that patient then is admitted to a post-acute provider, a SNF, a rehab facility, et cetera. If they're finding that those, by the data mining, that the disposition status does not match what is shown when the patient's admitted to a post-acute facility, they're actually taking the payment down, of course, to a transfer rate or even penalizing the hospital for not having the correct discharge status by reducing or taking back that payment. So that's just some additional RAC targets to take note of. I won't spend a lot of time on this. We know the four RACs that are out there and how they're divided up by region. We know there was that little dispute kind of at the end of last year going into January from some of the folks that had assisted in the demonstration project that wanted access to be a part of the permanent program, and so they resolved that. The next slide shows not only just the regions and how they're broken out, but also kind of the phase-in schedule. And that relates to then the graph that CMS had released back in June that I'm showing here. And it's basically saying, look, all the states in yellow and green and all the states in blue, here's how we're going to go about the timing. They changed the way they were going to approach it. They started with the automated reviews. For the yellow and green states, they had put June of 2009. Technically, I don't think things really started to get posted to the RAC websites until, I believe, August. And September even, where they really started to add more states and add more issues. And we'll talk about, you know, what at the end of the day where these automated reviews are. But then also, and because this is important, in the implementation, they've kind of pushed back then the actual implementation of DRG, the complex reviews, which will be the DRG validations, coding errors, the DME medical necessity reviews, and of course, very importantly, the medical necessity reviews. And all of those will require the chart pulling and everything that we're trying to gear up for. And even though they say August, September 2009, October, November 2009 for the DRG validations, it's my humble opinion that we're still going to be in the data mining and the automated reviews through the rest of this year, and we'll most likely won't even start to get into the complex reviews until the start of 2010. If not towards the spring of 2010. And then they're really going to have to work fast to get this all implemented as required on the tax relief bill by the end of 2010. And especially if they talk about expanding this into other areas like Medicare Part D and Medicare Advantage, et cetera. We'll talk about that in a sec. Okay, so there's kind of a background from the demonstration project, some of those results, and the implementation plan. What's going on right now, as we were just talking about, an automatic review is just the data mining. So they have access to all that data. They're using their own proprietary software and data mining processes to go through. And what they're required to do is once they identify issues where they believe there are payment errors, they have to check with CMS and the intermediary to get that approved. And once it's approved, they post it to their website. And then once it's posted to their website, then there, of course, is they are free to then identify those payment errors and start to send those demand letters and post those payment takebacks. So, we're probably at about the time where some states or some facilities may have even started to see these letters come in, although I have not specifically heard of anyone who has. And then the complex reviews is when we're going to start to get into our chart requests. And let's see if I put some of the criteria here. Yeah. So when we get into those complex reviews, the RAC sends the medical record request letter. Hospitals have 45 days to submit those copy charts. The RACs then have 60 days to make their determination. Those demand letters are sent to the providers then to let them know what the outcome of that audit was. And, of course, the RAC will advise the hospital of a right of appeal. And hospitals can either agree with the RAC determination, actually contact and work with an initial rebuttal with the RAC itself, and then, of course, file a formal appeal through the Medicare appeals process. Right now, what's going on out there in the automated reviews, of course, they're looking specifically at blood transfusion, IV hydration, bronchoscopies, new LASTA issues, social work issues, and primarily what they're scanning and doing data mining for is, again, for those quantity or, you know, build unit errors, where if there were several endoscopy or bronchoscopy services that were performed, and it should have been put under one add-on code, and instead they billed three separate procedures, they're going to figure out what was the right payment under the APC and take back the other payments that were made incorrectly. And a once-in-a-lifetime procedure codes, et cetera, age limits on the pediatric codes, just kind of those low-hanging fruit, easy to kind of scan through the data and identify those areas where there could be errors. And then they're going to send, of course, those demand letters to correct those errors and require the hospitals. It's the onus is then put on the facility to respond to that if they believe they have a case otherwise. Okay. So now we arrive at this point. So how should hospitals prepare? My first statement is hospitals should already be preparing, and even if hospitals have not fully engaged in this yet, there's probably a lot of processes that they have in place that will be beneficial to not only just the RAC audits, but then helping to fix future payment recoveries. And what I mean by that is what I mentioned at the start of this presentation. This is nothing new. It's not like we haven't had other auditors, third-party auditors, Blue Cross, United Healthcare, Aetna, that come in and review our claims to make sure they're correct payments. It's not like we haven't already had Medicare audit contractors, MACs, that are coming in and auditing for fraudulent, you know, for under the revenue integrity process for CMS to make sure that there weren't false payments, et cetera. I mean, this audit process is nothing new. Not only that, but denials. I mean, that's kind of what we've been dealing with all along anyway, is when a payer reviews the claim and then they deny payment to you, it's essentially the same thing. They're just not taking back money. They're not paying you the money, and it's up to you to either appeal that, provide additional documentation, et cetera. So the fact that this is not new and really all the hubbub is just around RAC because it's gotten a lot of press, a lot of attention. It has potential high-dollar impact for money take-back that's already been recognized by a hospital, and that's always scary. And more importantly, that the actual contractors, the RACs themselves, are paid on a contingency basis, which, of course, is a dangerous and conflict of interest because, of course, they're going to go in and quite assertively and aggressively seek for those payment errors. And then, like I had mentioned, it's up to the hospital to then prove otherwise. So there's a potential, if we're not organized here, that this could really overwhelm your facility and could really end up taking millions of dollars, actually, out of cash and revenue that you've already received and recognized. And it certainly could interrupt future cash flows in a time when we could ill afford to, you know, when we're just scraping what got by to get these payrolls paid and to cover our expenses at a break even, let alone the losses that some facilities are taking. Okay, so this next slide is just, again, from a high level, our goal is to assess and then determine how to best implement for each hospital around organizing a team to guide the process internally, to assess what you have and do not have in place to assist through the RAC process, to determine whether or not you have recently and or have audited some of these high-risk areas to determine potentially what your risk is for the RAC to come in and not only just take back some of these payments, but if we don't get it fixed now, then on a continued go-forward basis, they will continue to audit and take back money. Education, not just around the team that organizes this, not just HIM or case management, to really get the physicians and staff educated, to prepare for the RAC process and how the demand letters are going to come in, not demand letters, but the actual request letters, et cetera. How are we going to track it? And then most importantly, that last one, how are we going to use the information through this process to manage and improve those areas where we have found that not only is there high risk, but we're not, either the physicians are loosey-goosey about how they document certain admission status, et cetera, so that we can tighten down and fix those. So that's where we come into these, essentially these key steps that we recommend. I'll mention them briefly and then we'll just talk more in detail about each one. So as I mentioned, the first is to put together a multidisciplinary task force to oversee this process. Number two, perform your own internal or use, you know, whatever help you use on the consulting side, et cetera, someone to come in and just at least kick the tires and look and see what tools and processes you already have in place that will help curb your RAC exposure. And I'll talk a little bit, too, about what is in the RAC analysis tool in Clinical Advisor for those of you that have, if not all, that have access to that. The ability to conduct an internal coding audit or even to hire an external firm, a coding and documentation specialist that can come in and sample out in these high-risk areas several of your accounts and charts and make sure and look for those same high-risk areas. We talked about educating staff and physicians, developing a formal strategy and process to manage the RAC process, like where the letter's going to come to, who's going to be responsible for logging those in your tracking system, who's going to be responsible for determining where who's going to copy the charts and how this whole process is going to take place. Of course, identifying a tool or a system to track the RAC audit process, and that's going to be very important to track every single request that comes through so that you are in control of the your RACs, you know, the audit process that they're performing for your facility. And last but not least, make sure that you have a RAC-specific appeals management process and you've determined who's going to participate in that. Do you have a physician advisor that will assist with the overview and review of any demand letters, anything that they're taking back? Will legal get involved? To what extent will they review the letters, compliance leadership, et cetera? So the first one is just making sure, as an absolute starting point, to put together, like we would do on a revenue cycle assessment or a, you know, a clinical transformation or et cetera, you put together a specific task force that can lead. And I know this is always kind of seems cliche that we have to build task forces around everything, but in this case, a RAC task force that's represented by, as you can see, all those different areas, at least these areas, will allow this group to then communicate throughout the organization the impact that the RAC process is having. And as I said before, most importantly, who's going to be responsible for fixing some of the errors or areas where physicians aren't documenting as clearly as they should be, et cetera. It's this task force that will meet on a regular basis, and at least until we get well into the permanent program and people become more comfortable with the process, this team will be the ones who guide this implementation. When we talk about performing a high-level RAC risk assessment, if just for example, if we were to come in from Premier's consulting group, it would just be spending that day or two going through what processes you have in place, what denials management system do you have in place, and do you use it, and how is the communication to the organization? How do you manage orders, physician orders on the front end for procedures or scheduled surgical procedures, et cetera, in your facility? And do you have any kind of medical necessity screening, whether it be a system or a tool or even clinicians or folks that follow the criteria to make sure that it meets medical necessity? What is your case management model? Is it concurrent? Is it retrospective? Have you had any coding reviews internally or externally, et cetera? It's just to kind of start to build that and identify whether or not none of these things are in place, and so there really is going to be a lot of risk here, or whether you already have a lot of good processes in place to start from. And now we just go to, and I'll click to the next slide. Well, I'll talk about, yeah, clinical advisor. The next slide talks about doing the actual audits. So this is where clinical advisor comes in for those who have access. Clinical advisor, as of August, the August release, has a RAC analysis tool in it, and the tool was built absolutely off kind of that 80-20 rule that 85% of all of the takebacks came from inpatient services, and that 75% of those had to deal with incorrect coding and medical necessity. So the folks that built this tool in Clinical Advisor, that was their focus. So I just wanted to make sure we understood that. And I'll show you a couple screenshots. So what you'll do is go in and select your Medicare account, your Medicare payer, and you'll select the date. Right now we know it only goes, they're only going to go as far back as October 1st, 2007. And so you would select that date through today, and it's going to pull up a report that shows all of those areas that are at risk for medical necessity and all those areas that are at risk for incorrect coding. So that's just a high level kind of to show you the number of cases that are at risk. And then on this next slide, there's just a simple little screenshot that shows if you were to drill down into any one of those areas from that prior page that summarizes it, it'll pull up all of the accounts that fall into that criteria. And what this does is then allow whether it's someone in medical records or case management or whoever is determined wants to do this, you can start to audit these accounts, whether you pick a sample out because there's 1,200 cases and you just do a sample audit, or whether there's, 10 cases, and you can look at all of those charts. And what you're reviewing for is exactly, what's the right way to say this? Whatever the issue was, specifically that CMS, whatever the requirement was, you can look and see whether the documentation supports that, or whether you might be at risk for one of those RAC auditors to make a determination otherwise because the documentation isn't complete or the diagnosis didn't clear medical necessity criteria for that particular, for CMS's requirements, et cetera. So that's a tool that's available in Clinical Advisor, but then also that just, even if you don't have Clinical Advisor and or if you do, you can still use patient-level data. And you can identify out those same DRGs, those same high-risk areas. And we recommend that you proactively start to either internally or, again, spending the money to bring in an external coding and documentation specialist, because it will save millions in the long run versus the fees you'll pay now. And that's to do those coding and documentation reviews, to pull out a sample and to really look at those high-risk areas and come back and issue you their opinion or their report on how well the documentation is, whether the coding was done correctly, and give you some recommendations on what needs to be fixed so that you can fix that now. You can't go back and retroactively change any of that, but what you can do is start from October 22nd, 2009, fixing those errors so that as the RACs continue to audit all these on a go-forward basis, as of this date, you'll start to see your payment recoveries decrease and hopefully just completely go away altogether, because now you have fixed that documentation. You have fixed and are complying exactly with the coding requirements, et cetera. And the great thing about the fact that, I guess nothing great about it, but because the implementation on the complex reviews now is really pushing out into 2010, it's not too late to start this process. There is still time to organize and still time to sample, and still time to have these chart reviews and coding reviews, and especially in these high-risk areas that we kind of, it's not that they won't find other things that they didn't do in the demonstration project, but at least the demonstration project points us to exactly kind of what they're going after, and we should be auditing our own areas and determining what that risk is. Now, some folks, even after they have completed these audits and they've identified the risk, you can also calculate based upon the charges submitted for that area. You can start to estimate what the potential payment recovery is, and some facilities will start to accrue for that in their financial statements. Interestingly enough, auditors will not allow the financial statement accruals in the audited financial statements because the RAC review has not technically taken place yet and a determination has not been made. But several hospitals, in the effort to have no surprises, have started to put away some reserves for the potential risk they have from any payment takebacks. And then other organizations choose not to do anything until the RACs come in and actually start submitting demand letters. But I'm on the other side as a CPA, very conservative, that I want to know, I want to be in control of my own ship, if you will, and know what my issues are. I want to know where the leaks are so I can fix them instead of waiting for the ship to start, halfway sinking. So that's why this is all part of our recommendation. We talk about educating physicians and staff, and the most important thing there is just to have a formal outreach, especially on the education side, before we get too deep into the permanent program over these next, if you haven't done it already, at least over these next couple months, actually hold and organize an official presentation, and whether it's a lunch or a light dinner or whatever it is, to get those physicians in there. And you'll, of course, need to use and leverage off of your physician advisor or whoever's part of the RAC task force to really get attendance to that, and including some of the floor supervisors and nurses and clinicians, to get them in and educate them, give them a quick slideshow that educates them on what this RAC program is and what they're looking at and how significant the potential take-back could be. Because then once you start to identify your errors and issues and start to feed that back to the physicians, you can further train them, you can further at least provide them with feedback of how their either documentation or the way they do things is resulting in, several hundred thousand dollar, if not million dollar take-backs from these RACs. So I think this communication process is very important. And the feedback loop, it shouldn't just be a one-time meeting. Again, they should, whether it's on a quarterly basis, depending on how bad it is, monthly basis, they need to have this feedback and know what's happening so that we can correct any issues from this point forward. Now, managing the RAC process, we talk about making sure we've implemented a formal strategy, because we want no surprises when these request letters start coming in. We talked about, 45 days to provide these records. And once this thing starts happening and these letters start coming in, that's not a lot of time to get everything prepared, copied, and turned around if we're not organized to begin with. So we want to make sure you've started by contacting whoever your RAC is for your region. Have you contacted them directly? Do they have your correct address? And especially, is it going to exactly who you want the request letters to go to? You can give it a very specific address and a very specific, this who it's supposed to go to. You can educate your mailroom staff that this is about to happen, that we really need to make sure that, we watch out for these and that every single letter gets to the right person. And then who is the single person that's going to receive and log all of the RAC requests into the tracking system? Who's going to be responsible for making copies of all of the medical records that are requested? And what about, especially if they're stored off-site, just all the little details that you have to go through in preparation for this to happen. And then there's just the few other items that I've listed there. You can always request an extension, but you need to understand how that process works, and you need to be getting in touch with the RAC sooner than 45 days. And 45 days, as we've talked about before, that's 45 calendar days, not business days. So we need to remember, not everyone's working the weekends, et cetera. So we really just have to be organized around how this process is going to take place. So that kind of naturally flows into this next slide about a RAC tracking tool. If you don't have a RAC tracking tool identified, you need to. If you don't have some way to track all this, you're not going to stay in control of everything that was requested, everything that you've already completed and turned around, just in case anything gets lost. Who are you going to send it through, and how is that all going to be tracked? And so there are several. First of all, AHA, the American Hospital Association, they kind of put out an Excel-based, it's not just pure Excel, it's a little automated with some macros, et cetera, but they have a free tool out there called RACTrack. But what we've seen and what we recommend is really to spend, because sometimes these aren't terribly expensive, but there's a lot of IT vendors out there, system people that have created really nice, robust tools that really help integrate this entire RAC process. And you can use it not only for RAC, but like I said, you can use it for any of your other areas that are being audited where you're getting these kind of request letters. There's a list. I've included that link there at aha.org under the RAC section of their approved vendors that they've really tested. And it used to be that there were just, 20 or 30 vendors on that list. And because they're really scrutinizing and making sure that it meets certain criteria, that list is really dropped to a short list now. And one of the vendors that we have recommended to work with is CPR Technologies out of California that has it's called their Play-Doh RAC tool, and it has some other robust reporting options as well. And again, we have absolutely no financial tie or anything with any of these vendors. We just try to assess and recommend to our members and our clients tools that are out there that are effective and that are reasonably priced to manage this process. End of the day, the message here is that we need to put in place a rack tracking tool and work with our own IT department once we've identified that tool. Is there a way to automate as much of that data entry and that tracking as possible so that there's not a lot of manual intervention, because we know that we hardly have enough time as it is. Then last but not least, make sure you're prepared for the RAC appeals management process. Like I said, there's three outcomes. You either are going to agree with the determination made by the RAC and hopefully then fix the error so that from this point forward, you don't have to face any more takebacks in that area. You can discuss with RAC representatives any proposed recoupment action. You can contact the RAC directly after the receipt of the the results, the determination that they make. It kind of by highlight there too talks about the recoupment of the actual payment will occur 41 days after the demand letter. And I guess let's stop and just talk really quickly about that. From the demonstration project, of course, they would determine a multi-million dollar demand, and they would take that out of the next payment. So a hospital maybe was expecting a $3 million Medicare payment next week, and only half a million came through in cash, and it's because they actually then recouped the $2.5 million that the RAC auditors had determined. And now all of a sudden, hospitals really suffered some cash flow crunches. And so Medicare has, stepped back and tried to be more – I don't know if this is the right way to say this, but recoupment friendly this time. And so they wait till day 41 to make that recoupment, and there's options. You can, if it's really a cash flow issue, they're going to allow up to 12-month payment arrangements to be made. If you're appealing something that you believe you have a significant appeal case on, if you do it within the first, I want to say it's got to be logged within the first 30 days, after receiving your determination letter from the RAC, then they'll put that recoupment on hold until that appeal case is resolved, et cetera. And so that third item says the hospital, of course, may disagree and then put in place or follow up with an appeal letter. And it's the same five levels of Medicare appeal process that they go through now. And I'm not going to go into that detail of that level of detail, but just to give you an idea, out of all of the demonstration project, of all of the number of cases where payment recovery was made, 14% of those claims were appealed. And out of those, even though it's a small number compared to the entire population, a third of those appeals were actually overturned. So that's not all hope is lost. If a hospital genuinely has a case for appeal, those appeals should be made. So we need to make sure, just like being organized to manage the process, we have to know who is your team that's going to appeal, and are they fully versed, even ahead of time now, not waiting until the RAC makes a determination and a demand letter and tells you what the appeal process is. Contact your RAC and find out what letter formats need to be used, what the requirements are. Make sure you have your physician advisor, if you're going to have one, assist you in this process. Who from case management or the appeals team is going to be responsible for the oversight of this? Do you have access to legal counsel in your facility to review the cases and any of your appeal letters, et cetera? So a lot of this is just organization, organization, organization. Some of the facilities we've worked with have put all of this in place and have also done a mock audit. So they took I think it's like 20 or 30 letters and sent them out just as a pretend, and they wanted to make sure that all the letters made it to the right place, that all the letters were able to be logged in a sample basis, and they're really just testing and preparing. And some of these facilities, one in particular I'm thinking of, has yet to even really receive anything from their RAC, but they're ready to go, and they're organized. So the conclusion here, and this is very important, is there's still time. The opportunity still exists to be proactive, not reactive, to really get your data and start to either model the data mining that that the RACs are doing on your automated issues right now, but more importantly than these automated issues on some of these, you know, errors that will probably be a much smaller dollar impact, will be getting prepared for the complex reviews, getting prepared for those coding error issues and those meta, because those are going to be bigger payment takebacks, and there's still time to get ready for that. It's still the next, you know, three or so months before at least the initial DRG validations start. So again, we highly recommend that you put these steps in place, get these processes prepared, and then you'll be organized and ready to go. Or I just threw this in because I think these are funny, but or just keep doing the same old thing. And as the caption says, just because you've always done it that way doesn't mean it's not incredibly stupid. So, you know, the goal is to really organize and fix things, and don't let the RACs control you and spend the next several, you know, decade taking money back from you. Rather, get in front of your own data, get in control of your where your issues are. Even if you can't fix things that have happened since October 1st, 2007, you can fix them from this point forward and be pretty proactive and communicative with your RACs. At this point, I will, let's see. Yeah, at this point, I think I will turn it back to Lauren to either address any Q&A issues. But before I do that, and I'm not sure if their mics are open, but to Monica Pappas and to Mary Ritchie, do you have, at this point, any additional comments or anything else you would like to add? I apologize if I've just been going like crazy here on this presentation, but I thought I would check.
We're here, Todd, but I think you did a great job, and I think you covered everything that we kind of went through yesterday, and I guess I think we should, at this point, just leave it open for questions from the audience.
Okay, perfect.
All right, well, it's Lauren again, and what I'm going to do is ask Carrie, who's our operator, to come online and explain to people how to submit a question.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, for any questions or comments, please press star one now. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, for any questions or comments, please press star one.
While we're stepping up to indicate the questions, I'm going to open up a survey I just did, and you've got about 3 minutes to complete it. It's just three or four questions, and I appreciate you taking the time to do that for us. It really helps us develop and design future programs. Carrie, do we have anybody that has a question?
You do have a question from Christine Verbritten.
Okay, go ahead, Christine.
Hi. I just have one quick question in regards, you had made note of contacting your regional RAC. How do we find out who that is? Is there a list somewhere online?
Yeah, there is. So even from this presentation, remind me, let me just get out of this right here.
Todd, it's on page six.
Yeah, on page six. Where are you located?
I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
So you're in Wisconsin, which means someone's probably faster than me and is already there, but we need to go forward a little bit.
Todd, should I be trying to go to a certain page?
I am on page, it's just kind of hanging up a little bit here.
I've got it back. I think I had to take it back to open the survey, so.
Oh, okay. Do you need to?
Yep,
so
tell me where you need me to go.
Start with page 9.
Right here? Yep.
I'm looking for the map.
Was Wisconsin Region B?
Keep going. Yeah, Region B.
There we go.
Yeah, there you go. So you can identify your region, and then if you go back just one slide, so we know CGI is your RAC, and it would be easy to send out, but even if you just type in CGI Technologies, that name right there, it's going to pull up their website, and then you can go directly to their website and either submit a contact that way, but I also would recommend just contacting someone at their facility and find out who's going to be within their organization, who are the representatives that will work on your particular facility, and open up that line of communication.
Okay, so just go to CGI Technologies, and I'll find it there.
Yep, and just type in fact. While we go on to any other questions, I'll just do the same thing right now and type in the and tell you what the web address is.
Okay. Thank you.
Harry, are there any other questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
I think there was a couple chat box questions. Todd, did you see these? One was, what issues is RAC targeting with DRG416 sepsis?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I see that. I will defer. Monica, I don't know much about specifically what they're going to focus on, so I'll ask Monica and Mary with their comments.
Well, I think they're focusing on sepsis because a lot of the documentation by the physicians does not support the full sepsis, the full picture of the patient. And it could be that it's another kind of infection. And, of course, the sepsis DRG pays a lot more than, you know, another infection-type DRG. But I think that's what they're looking for because we have not been good at documenting that and querying for it afterwards. Lots of times the physician will talk about both a urinary tract infection and a sepsis of some kind. And you go through the chart, and you cannot tell exactly which is the principal diagnosis. So that is why I think they're looking at it, because they're going to find a lot that have gone to sepsis that should have been at another kind of diagnosis.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it came in the chat box, so let's hope so. If not, Tammy, you can go ahead and shoot me another message if you've got any follow-ups on that. And there was also a request for you to, Todd, to just review the RAC analysis tool and clinical advisor real quick. Again, can you do that?
Yeah. Just provide an overview of that again.
Sure.
Yeah, so just within, as I'd mentioned, within the August of this year update, or upgrade to the clinical advisor system, there is now built into the system, and unfortunately, I can't identify exactly like where that is within the menu, but if you go in and identify the RAC analysis tool, it then opens up and lets you, it kind of gives you the option to pick the specific payers that you want to look at, which, of course, is for these purposes right now is Medicare, but eventually we could start to pick other payers that are looking at the same things because, quite frankly, third-party audits have gone up some 50 to 70% since all the attention on the RAC side. So those, you know, third-party payer audits are going up quite a bit too. Then you just put in your date ranges, which for now would absolutely be back to October 1st, 2007 through today's date. And then it just runs the report, and it just takes a quick minute, and it pulls up the, like I said, the high-level screen that shows you what areas under medical necessity and under coding, incorrect coding. It gives you a summary of what the issue is and how many cases your particular hospital, how many were identified. And then you double-click on any one of those specific areas, and it'll drill down and show you a list of all the accounts and the account numbers and all the detail to those accounts so that you can use that list to go and actually pull charts or do whatever you determine you want to do to check and see, do you really have an issue with those?
Are there any other questions, Carrie?
Once again, for any questions or comments, please press star 1.
I have that address for the Medicare RAC Region B, and that's just at, the way they show it is, you know, the regular HTTP, but it's racb.cgi.com. We'll take you right to CGI Federal, which is the Medicare RAC B website. They have contact information on there. They have examples of frequently asked questions, sample letters, and each of the RACs, any one of the four RACs, has their own website now. And like I said, they had to post those automated issues to their websites so that people know what their data mining for before any demand letters can be sent.
All right. Is there any other questions?
There are no questions on the phone.
All right. Well, I think we'll just go ahead and end the program today. Todd, do you have anything else? Or Monica, anybody else, anything else to add?
No, just the emphasis, really the tone of this presentation should be don't give up hope, but there's still time. And if you haven't started, you can still start and start. You really should get prepared for this. So.
All right, and with that said, Todd, I've got your – I went ahead and put up your contact info in case anybody has a question and they were too shy to ask. They can go ahead and shoot it to you personally.
Perfect.
All right. Great. All right, I want to thank Monica and Mary for joining us too. We'd love for you to join us again for an Advisor Live series. Remember, our programs are open to everyone and they are no charge. Take care, everyone, and have a good day. Speakers, please stay on the line for a brief wrap-up.
Thank you.
Thank you for your participation. This does conclude today's conference. You may now disconnect.